I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
In 1967, Jimi Hendrix committed what is on its face a matter of low-grade arson and, at best, a simple fire code violation. And yet, somehow, this can make us a little more introspective during this Thanksgiving season. I'll tell you why on Box Number 7. If the 1981 movie called Stripes wasn't enough of an inspirational front load for my own military service, it also serves as one of the most memorable scenes in what I would call a Johnny Paycheck moment. You may remember Johnny Paycheck was the, I don't know if he was the principal writer, but he was the principal artist that recorded a song called Take This Job, and you know the song. Bill Murray's character in Stripes was named John Winger and is this workaday cab driver who, after taking the final straw of verbal abuse from a patron in the back of his car, he stalls the car on a bridge during rush hour traffic in New York and walks away. Now, aside from the perceived and immediate gratification we've all felt about this scenario, you know, via workplace angst, there is an underlying positive behind the abruptness of the scene. And that is, John Winger decided, quote, "Today is the day I'm changing things," unquote. At least that's the quote I put in his mind. Extrapolated from his actions, of course. The artist and singer Warren Barfield has a song. It's called If You're Waiting for the Right Time, and it contains this phrase. If you're waiting for the right time will fly right by you. You're always planning and never moving. You're always praying but never doing. And it ain't living if you're just spending your life waiting for the right time. Now, I have times found myself inspired by this sometimes viral clip of the actor Jim Carrey speaking at a commencement ceremony. And as he's speaking to graduates, he makes this phrase. He says that caution can simply be fear masquerading as practicality. Caution can simply be fear masquerading as practicality. And he goes on to imply, you know, that we all struggle with the possibility of failure, even at things we disdain or things that we may love. Could be me, but I'm sensing a theme here. And somewhere along the line, I think we've adopted this human algorithm that states that we are to slave away in an 80-20 capacity. 80% of our lives we invest in a retirement that we hope can be spent on the remaining 20% of our lives, at least right up until we, you know, die. And that's assuming we live long enough to balance that equation in the first place. This is hogwash, and I don't know about you, but I just think it's time for us to stop and think and take this algorithm, its mindless proponents, and show them the door. Now, make no mistake, this isn't an all-play and no-work philosophy. This isn't some advocacy for some utopian French work week with naps and wine. I'm talking about the issue of the right here and now. I think back a number of years ago, actually quite a few years ago, we were, many years ago now, we were running the sprinkler on the front lawn, and my daughters were probably 5 and 4 at the time, maybe 6 and 5, and they were screaming and riding their bikes through the water. And yes, their tires were creating those awful cross-hatched irrigation divots in my grass. And one of my neighbors, you know, the local neighborhood quality control guy, the HOA president that lays awake travailing over the fact that I didn't use an edger last time I mowed the lawn, he walks over to inform me that, quote, those bikes were going to ruin my lawn. I looked at him and I said, well, if I was raising grass, I would be concerned. He walked off. Looking back over the last few years, I realize that there have been times that I have been as myopic about useless minutiae as that guy was. I've allowed the dumbest things to circumvent moments of my own family, my kids, my wife, all because I've adopted the world's greatest hoax. And I've heaped the world's most appalling backpack of responsibility behind me and can barely carry it. I don't know about you, but I, for one, have had it. Now, maybe it's my age, but I know this all started coming to a head when some years ago my family and I traveled to a nearby city. It was for a concert, but on the way home, we stopped at what the sign said was an estate sale. That's right. We basically engaged in the organized, compensatory looting of a dead woman's home. My daughter bought an old Kodak movie camera. Don't know if it worked, but what was perhaps once a raging vortex of sentimentality in one family is now shot into the ether and now in the hands of a child she never knew. In the split second, it went from the grand pedestal of intrigue to a teenage junk drawer. Why? All because that person is gone. Look, everything around you is going to burn one day. That stack of heirloom china on the shelf you've tucked away for quote-unquote someday, it's going to shatter or burn or wind up worse at the flea market table after you're gone in the hands of some merchant you will never meet. And it won't have value augmentation because the, quote, previous owner hoarded it in a hutch for 25 years, unquote. So here's my advice. Use it. Take that stuff off the shelf and use it. If it breaks, guess what? That's right. The world continues to spin, irrespective of declining resale value. I don't care if someone gives me a vintage last one on earth Rolls Royce. I'm driving it into the ground. They can hand me a vase from the Ming Dynasty, and I'm putting it in the kids' room. A first edition signed copy of Huckleberry Finn? That's right. I'm reading it. I'm even cracking the spine because I laid another book on it to, quote, pin it open, unquote. I don't want to read a newer copy because I have this one now. Why? Because one day I will be gone. Look at how perverse this really is. We are replacing the real priceless artifacts in our lives, our loved ones, in the name of laying up in store for a rainy day. But guess what? The rainy day comes, and that rainy day fails to meet the standard for some reason. So let's stock up on some more stuff instead. We have deified the artifacts in our life that can be resold in the name of reducing in sacred value that which we claim we would never sell. By the way, that mindless soul-sucking job robbing you of your last vestige of goodwill, out with it. Leave. Take that infernal potential robbing cancer off the shelf and put your, I don't know, kids on it. Put down the phone. Turn the screens off. If you have to pull a logistical DB Cooper just to make this happen, do it. Just politely grab the loot, the gun, excuse yourself, and make the leap. The Sierra Nevadas are waiting for you, my friend, not your detractors. You. Speaking of which, that $1,600 acoustic guitar I've babied, I'm beating it to death. I don't care if it looks like Willie Nelson's nylon string has been by the time I'm dead. It was made to be throttled into the ground, and that happens when we decide to wrench it from that for which it was made. For potential. Just like you. So what about Jimi Hendrix? Well, his positive influence in my life was always confined to his fearless guitar work. If you don't know me, I am a guitar player of reasonable skill set. The rest of Jimmy's life, however, especially his nihilistic expiration, has always been the point of departure and always been a cautionary tale of excess. But the moment he torched his Stratocaster at the 1967 Monterey Pop Festival does have a takeaway. It is temporal versus eternal. Now, whether or not this was Jimmy's point, we'll never know, but his willingness to disconnect from his material doppelganger and light his guitar on fire and break it to pieces is instructive. In fact, I'm hoping one day Itzhak Perlman is ricocheting that violin bow off his 300-year-old Stradivarius in front of a crowd that paid $1,000 a ticket to see him play Paganini's 24 Caprices, and then suddenly stops, looks at the audience, walks up to a microphone and says, "That's it. I'm done. Grandkids are waiting for me in the truck. Good night, Dallas." Dallas for $1,000. Well, okay. And then shoves that Strad neck right through the monitors and bounces out. So for this Thanksgiving, I'm just stopping for a moment and looking around me. And I think that instead of tons of turkey and dressing and misappropriated priorities, I'm going to run with the distilled Jimmy on the side. Let's get on with it. And have a happy Thanksgiving. This is Box Number 7.